everybody. This is Ben Starr with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. More positively minded life. And as you all know, it's a tradition, and a time-honored tradition at that, here on The Positive Mind, that we look at common issues from an uncommon perspective. So we like to take everyday issues, or issues that we're used to talking about, from a certain perspective and turn it inside out and consider the other side of that. And that's something that Armand DeMille was brilliant at doing, and something that I think we all learned a lot from Armand. And so today, we're going to talk about a topic that's pretty sensitive, but also wildly, I guess, touchy in a way. It's something that we've heard a lot about, we've read a lot about, seen a lot in movies and on the news, and we're talking about psychopathy, right? Psychopathic people and psychopathic behavior. Now, when we tend to talk about psychopathy, we talk about men, because that seems to be the stereotype, right? Is that psychopaths tend to be men. Well, today I have a guest here. I have several guests who have devoted a lot of time and energy into researching, learning about, and writing about the phenomenon of psychopathy, but particularly in women. So my guests today, they come from me from the Society for Psychopathic Research, or rather the Society for the Scientific Study of Psychopathy. I have with me Winifred Rule and Dr. Craig Newman of the University of North Texas. Winifred, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Ben.
Thank you for joining me. Craig, Dr. Craig Newman, welcome to the program.
Hello, Ben, and hello all the listeners. Thanks for having me today.
It's a pleasure. So we wanted to talk to both of you today and to our listeners. Julian is on a day off today. He'll be back with us as usual next week. But we wanted to talk to these guests because, well, first of all, Winifred had been invited to be a guest by Armand some time ago, and for obvious reasons, it never worked out, and we're very glad that we could finally get her into the studio. Winifred, tell me about your experience with Armand.
Well, first of all, I was in this office. I was in this office on April 23rd, and I met with Armand. And he was just wonderful. He said to me then, psychologists and psychiatrists would not know the psychopath as well as I, because I lived with two of them. And in the early days, I remember Armand DeMille used to always close the show by saying, "We are all in this together, my friends." Now, I'm listening to Armand's show for 20 years. And just saying that just gave me such a connection. And I felt that, and it brought me on to my own discovery. Really, listening to Armand's show gave me the equivalent of an advanced degree in psychology. So I'm very grateful to Armand. He was he had much wisdom. And I remember some of his sayings that I would write down, because it would just meant so much to me. For example, tears are the sweat of the heart.
Oh, that was everyone's favorite, you know.
He loved it.
Tears are the sweat of the heart, my friends. And
That
was a great one. I want to just start with, on a very basic note, just getting a definition from the both of you, because we hear a lot about psychopaths. The term is thrown around loosely. You know, someone might say to a friend or family, "Oh, you're such a psycho," you know, and really it's become a sort of catch-all for someone who people think are out of the norm of usual behavior, or strange or crazy. But really, there's a very specific definition. Craig, Dr. Newman, would you give us a definition of a psychopath?
Sure. Let me first start with saying, you know, things it's not, as you hinted at. When people use the phrase, "you're such a psycho," very important to understand that we're not talking about someone who is necessarily psychotic. Psychopathic personality disorder, in many cases, in most cases, has nothing to do with a psychotic individual or someone with a psychotic condition such as schizophrenia. it also has very little to do, say, with something like multiple personality disorder, or the technical term these days is dissociative identity disorder. So it's very important to be clear that it's a pathological personality disorder that is manifested in terms of extreme levels of certain personality traits, in particular, interpersonal manipulativeness and grandiosity, pathological lying, a high level of affective callousness and remorseless use of others, in combination then with more overt manifestations such as impulsive, reckless behavioral lifestyle. And then often, not in all cases, but often these individuals also show very overt cases of aggression and violence, which may include things like murder and criminal acts, but not necessarily.
Okay.
So the key is that it's these four basic domains of interpersonal manipulativeness, affective callousness, reckless lifestyle, and overt antisociality at a high level, and chronically over time. That is the quintessential psychopathic individual.
So, as you say, it's the repeated, continued demonstration of these kind of qualities. And I have a list here, and I'll just read off some of them. Incapacity for love, that's right at the top of the list. So that's the inability for unconditional valuing of another being.
Correct,
We have disregard for obligations, right? Ignoring daily tasks or expectations. Callousness or shallow emotion.
Yep.
Lack of remorse or shame. Manipulation, bending other to their will. And I know Winifred's going to have a lot to talk about that one in a moment here. Pathological lying, and that's something that Dr. Newman just touched on. Lying, and more lying, often without a need or reason.
Yeah.
Grandiosity or glibness. Failure to accept blame, invoking pity, being charming yet insincere, being easily bored or often searching for excitement, living a parasitic lifestyle, right? Preying on the weak or someone who's vulnerable. And there's many of these. There's actually 22 on this list. And Winifred, before we went on the air, I told you it's, I think, anyone you hand this list to, it's human nature that they would start searching this list for qualities they see in themselves. And you told me, if you have two or three of these, it doesn't make you a psychopath. How many of these traits, Winifred, do you need to be classified a psychopath?
In my book, Born to Destroy, I have 22 traits. In order to be a psychopath, you would have to have at least 16 of the 22 traits. One or two or three or four traits is not going to make you a psychopath. And most people think that murderers are all psychopaths. Most murderers are not psychopaths. So you have to demonstrate these traits and characteristics in a consistent manner across all aspects of your personal, professional, and social life.
As Dr. Newman said, over an extended period of time.
Exactly. Yep.
But in all aspects of your life, too. Not only over an extended, in all aspects.
So what would that be in a social aspect, in a work aspect, in a family aspect?
Well, for example, a person could be abusive to you at work, but quite the opposite with family. This is not a psychopath.
Right.
Or you may have a boss that's very charming and manipulative and perhaps even ruthless in business with business associates. But that same person may be forthright with friends. This is not a psychopath. Or she may feel no guilt about cheating on her taxes, but she may feel terribly guilty about hurting another human being. This is not a psychopath. So there is a caution, cautionary. We cannot just think of one or two or three traits or the murderer or the or somebody who's lied to us as the psychopath. We have to be very careful. It's very hard to ferret out a psychopath.
And to that point, to support everything that Winifred had to say, is when an individual who has clinical levels of psychopathic personality, when they might be being glib and charming, and using pity, it may first appear, that first impression may seem like this is a genuine and sometimes charismatic person. So it takes not only in all situations, but it starts to reveal itself over time. And so to the comment about, psychologists and psychiatrists may not recognize a psychopath, it can very well happen that experts in the field on first impression don't necessarily pick up on the psychopathic individual, because it can be very deceptive initially, but it's this across situations chronically over time that the lying, the manipulativeness, and in essence the callous use of others for their own needs, that becomes apparent over time, becomes very clear over time.
Well, I have a couple more questions for you, Dr. Newman, just based on some statistical and informational things.
Sure.
What is the prevalence of psychopathy in the general population? I mean, if you took 100 people off the street, how many are going to be psychopaths?
Well, it's tough to do because we can't necessarily pull people randomly off the street, but we're starting to do general population studies. More research is being done in general population studies, in psychiatric populations, not just offender samples. And so our best estimate is it's maybe 1 to upwards to 3% of the general population who are showing elevated clinical levels of psychopathic traits. Now, what's interesting is we did a study recently of over 30,000 individuals from every major region of the world, and one of the things that's quite clear from this study is the level of higher levels of psychopathic traits can be influenced by culture. And certain cultures and certain, you can imagine, violent, war-ridden, very precarious types of environments tend to push for more elevations in psychopathic features.
Well, that sort of behavior would be rewarded in that environment.
It may be.
Be a survival tactic as well.
Some people have argued that psychopathy, in part, is an adaptive strategy. But I'm of the position that there may be some short-term adaptive gains, but ultimately we are a social species. And ultimately, when you are using other people for your own personal gain because of psychopathic propensities, ultimately that is dysfunctional in the long run.
Sure. So to expand on that last question, we're talking today about specifically the phenomenon of female psychopaths. So what I'd like to know is there any research that differentiates, that shows us the prevalence of psychopaths among the female population?
Well, in prison samples, this is where most of the research has been done. It's much less. In male samples, it's about 15 to maybe 25% of male offenders. For women, it's maybe between 9 and maybe upwards to 12%. It takes whatever it is, and there's many things that cause psychopathy, it seems to take more of the pathology for women to display psychopathic propensities. But Winifred is probably, I'm sure, going to have other things to share on this.
Absolutely. Ben Starr here with you at The Positive Mind. Julian Joiello has the day off. My guests today are Winifred Rule, the author of Born to Destroy, the first instructional work on the female psychopath, and Dr. Craig Newman, a professor of clinical psychology at the University of North Texas. Thank you both for joining me. Winifred, tell me about your experience. You mentioned having lived with several psychopaths. Tell me about that.
Well, my sister and I were, I call my sister Dee. All names have been changed. My sister Dee was 6 years older than I. And one of the things, she was very bold and brazen, more so than other girls. And I remember 6 years old. But I remember something that came to mind was a sterling silver bracelet. And I'll tell you a little story. Dee was very flirtatious at 12 years old, and the boys used to flock to her. She was pretty, but she wasn't that pretty. But she knew how to charm and manipulate, and she had a way with boys that could get them to do what she wanted them to do, like buy her expensive jewelry. And one boy in Dee's class, now he was 12 and she was 12, he gave her a sterling silver bracelet that belonged to his sister. He stole it from his sister and gave it to Dee because Dee manipulated and charmed him into giving her expensive jewelry. Now, when my mother, Helen, and her name has changed, found out, she applauded Dee's efforts and saw her as a master manipulator with a capacity to charm and lie. And if I didn't hear it once, I heard it 1,000 times. Dee could charm the birds out of the trees. Of course, I, Winifred, could not do that. I didn't know how to charm anyone. I was just a kid, and as I grew up, I couldn't lie, I couldn't charm, I couldn't manipulate, and nor did I want to. But Dee had this capacity already at 12 years old.
But
I
you
was
know,
six.
You're pretty charming, Winifred. I've met your husband. He's a nice guy. Yeah. You seem to have charmed him.
Thank you. Well, I tried. He was a lovely person. And from the minute I saw him, I saw in his eyes. So anyway, my mother, Helen, when she found out that Dee got this sterling silver bracelet from the boy in his class who stole it from his sister, Helen applauded Dee's efforts to get a stolen bracelet, and she was allowed to keep the bracelet.
So what was that like for you? I mean, experiencing that, you were witnessing what you felt even as a young child was behavior that you felt was maybe not morally in line with how you felt even as a young child. And yet here you saw your mother congratulating and even...
Exactly.
Yeah. What was that like for you? Was that hard to deal with?
At 6 years old, at that early age, I knew that there was something wrong. Although I loved my mother and my sister. And I wanted to say this because, you know, it's not easy to talk about your mother. Mother is always special, and mother is the dearest thing to anyone. And my mother was very special to me. I loved her dearly. I used to buy her things. I used to sell lemon. I was always selling something. I used to sell lemonade. I used to make potholders. I wanted to, you know, accumulate a few dollars so I'd buy her a little present and I'd kiss her. But no matter what I did for her, no matter how much I kissed her, no matter what I bought for her, she did not change. She just simply didn't have any affection toward me, and that was the way it is. So that was the way it was with my mother, Helen. I have to tell you, my mother, Helen, got rid of me. It wasn't that way. I was clinging. And that's how I know so much about them, is I was always clinging and hanging on. That's always mommy. Mommy's special.
So you, at what point did you, I guess, realize or learn? I mean, you had always had a struggle living with your mother and your sister. But at what point in your life did you think about it in terms of the context of psychopathy? When did you, I mean, because as a child, you know, we're innocent and we're not necessarily aware. So maybe... You may have felt like it was something was wrong with you because you were almost outnumbered in the house, right?
I did.
But at what point did you start thinking about it in terms of psychopathy?
Well, you know, I started, believe it or not, as I mentioned, I was listening to Armand's show for 20 years. And there were times I would just, because of the way he spoke, that grandfatherly, compassionate voice. And I have a lovely husband and I have two lovely children. I'm very happy, proud of them. But there was something missing, and that was my mother. No matter what I did, as I said, it wasn't working out. So there was that sadness there. That was the child within me was sad. And I felt that with Armand, listening to his show for so many years, I went on this discovery. And that's when I started to read books. I read some excellent books. I met with Dr. Robert Hare in Maine, and I had written, believe it or not, I wrote a book that was fiction. I was too embarrassed to write nonfiction. So I wrote fiction. And every time I sent it out to a literary agent or an editor, they get back to me and they say, gee, the writing is excellent, but why don't you make it nonfiction? I was just too embarrassed to do that, but that's what I was urged to do. So I decided that I would sit down and start writing nonfiction. And then I went to meet Dr. Hare and I spoke with him. And I realized that what I had, of course, not only just that one thing, but a lot of readings, meeting other psychopathy researchers, that what I had in my mother, Helen, and in my sister, Dee, were two classic cases of psychopathic females.
And that's very interesting and begs a question. Maybe, Dr. Newman, you could answer this for us, but is there a genetic predisposition? Is there a genetic link for this sort of behavior or this personality type?
Well, the quick answer is there's no simple solution. It's both. It's both. There's clear evidence, and it's with most human characteristics. You know, our personality, our political persuasion, our intelligence. All human characteristics are a combination of both genes and environment,
nature and nurture.
Yes, and the most sophisticated understanding these days is in some cases certain environmental experiences can actually turn genes on and become more expressive. In other cases, our genetic propensity shapes the environment, in which we're in. But I wanted to say one thing to just add to what Winifred had to say, and that is, you know, you might think, well, why did it take her so long to recognize this? Why does it take people so long to recognize this? And this is something essential, I think, for people to understand. You don't want to blame yourself because, say, why did it take me so long? It's that our society is built on trust. Our society is built on genuine human interrelations. When you take your car in to get fixed, and you're not much of an auto mechanic, and you are trusting this individual to fix your car, or any sort of human relation, inner relationship we have, you know, it's based on shared emotion, shared values to some extent, more or less. And this for us to live as a social species, we have to trust. We have to take people at face value that they're genuine. And this is why the psychopath often is successful, at least in the short term, is they use the social system. They use the charm. They use the, in Winifred's case, you know, keep trying, you know, maybe you'll please me. Try harder. It's something about you. So you don't ever want the individual that's affected by the psychopath, you never want to blame them for perhaps coming around to this realization in a longer period of time than perhaps they should have. It's the nature of our society that leads us to generally trust people.
Well, you make a great point there about, you know, the possibility that the psychopathic trait can actually help someone be successful. And really quickly, I wanted to ask you, Dr. Newman, about your research that you did with Dr. Paul Babiak regarding psychopaths in the corporate world. And you, the two of you, found that, and Robert Hare as well, you found that psychopaths are overrepresented in the corporate world and especially in management positions.
Yes, and so this is, you know, this is a, it's a very large corporate study. Thankfully, Dr. Babiak was able to do some extensive work across the nation, work with some very top-level companies, and in addition to his consulting work, was able to do research. And what we found with some 200, over 200 fairly mid to high level executives, that the estimated prevalence of clinical threshold levels of psychopathic traits was about 3.9, maybe 4%, so almost four times the rate of what you see in the general population. And this goes to the point that in some environments, some contexts, you know, certain traits may be rewarded.
I guess that's what people mean when they say that.
Rewarded.
Yeah, that's what people mean when they say that business is ruthless, right?
Yeah, and the trouble is we're continuing with our corporate research, and we're not going to let go of this. This is very important. There's also a very important colleague, Cynthia Matthew, up in Ontario, who's doing some phenomenal work, and we have some self-report scales for employees to rate their supervisors. But the difficulty is businesses often don't want this information revealed, and it's difficult to get a foothold into the businesses to do this research, but it causes havoc on the employees. A psychopathic supervisor, someone who's in control and is being cold and ruthless and mean to individuals, has far-ranging effects on people's emotional well-being, their job satisfaction, and their performance. And the question is it that psychopathic individuals gravitate to some business worlds because it
rewards that behavior in some ways?
Yeah. And then how much, and then the other side of the sort of chicken and an egg question is how much is of that the environment also tends to shape people such that they become a little more cold and rude.
And now we're back at nature versus nurture, which is sort of where we always wind up here on The Positive Mind.
Yeah.
We have about 5 minutes before we take a short break. But I wanted to ask Winifred, you know, it's one thing when you go to work every day and you're dealing with a psychopathic colleague or a psychopathic supervisor, but you've had the experience of actually living full time with two psychopaths in your family. Mm-hmm. And that is almost inescapable. And I wonder, what became of your relationships? Did you completely cut them off? Were you ever able to find some sort of rapprochement? Tell me about that. How did it ever turn out?
Well, they got rid of me. They just didn't want anything to do with me. I have a lovely husband. He would do anything for my mother and my children, and they just neither my mother nor my sister wanted anything to do with my husband, my children, and it became dangerous because then they started to do things that were dangerous to my family. I lived with them, so I got used to a lot of the dangerous things they did, but then as a mother, I just couldn't allow it. So I did go for counseling, many places. I wanted to find out what I should do. And everyone said, avoid a psychopath, avoid them at all cost. And even at the different conferences I would go to, avoid a psychopath. Now, I just want to say one thing, Ben. You were talking about the psychopath in the business world, but I was at a conference at once, and they say that psychopaths often like to go into politics. There's an awful lot of money they can play with
there. I believe that. Yeah, that's not a surprise at all.
They do. They go into it. And of course, we're hearing so much about who's arrested, and we're putting our faith and trust in these people because they are charming and they know how to draw you closer. That is the thing.
Well, if Dr. Newman found that 4% of people in the corporate world exhibit psychopathic traits, I wouldn't be surprised if it was 40% in the world of politics.
Yeah.
We see, I mean, you got to just look at the, like we talk about grandiosity. Mm-hmm. I mean, pathological lying, manipulation. These are almost prerequisites to be a politician these days.
Ultimately, and this is one of the original thinkers on this, Hervé Cleckley, ultimately a psychopath fouls their own nest because of the personality pathology. So, and what we found in the corporate study is no one single individual who was psychopathic made it to the level of president. They made it to upper-level management. Not one person made it to president. So they can game the system, and they will perhaps have some success, but ultimately, because it's a pathological personality condition, because of the recklessness, the impulsivity, the use, the callous use of others, they will be spotted out. It may take time, but they will create a bit of havoc for themselves as well.
Interesting. Winifred, when's the last time you had contact with either your mother or your sister?
Well, as I said, they got rid of me years ago.
So how long ago?
Well, you know, you're asking a question which is interesting, and I really hesitated, should I discuss this? My sister, Dee, distanced herself from all my happy occasions. She never sent a greeting card when I had my two children. You know, two children are born, we're just two sisters. She was 6 years older. There were no telephone calls for whatever the celebration, no well-wishing, no contact whatsoever. She wanted nothing to do with me. A psychopathic female can be very envious. But I will say, she did want to destroy my book, Born to Destroy. I had heard about it. She had left a message that she was out to discredit and to destroy the book. That's the only thing I ever heard about her, is when she wanted to destroy. Quite honestly, I stay away from them because, in fact, they are dangerous and they will destroy.
Has it been months or
years,
decades?
Oh, no,
I mean, how long are we talking?
We're talking enough years to, as a matter of fact, I have to be honest with you, my father died, and I was close to my father, Zeke. I loved him.
Sorry to hear
And
that.
He loved me, too. And they didn't want him to be close to me. You see, the psychopath cannot take happiness or joy in other people. And my father and I, there was a little thing together with the two of us, so they had to break that. And my father was, he was a good man, but he was weak. He fell under my mother's sway. And, you know, she was glib. Psychopath is always glib. And he really didn't speak too much. You know, he liked to be quiet. And the psychopath is extroverted. That's how they, you know, they charm you and they draw you closer. They'll also devalue you, too. If they can't use you one way, they're going to use you another. So, but anyway, my father died. I wasn't even allowed to come to his wake or his funeral.
Is your mom still around?
Yes. They're both alive. And the last message was a disturbing. They leave messages, threatening messages on my tape, on my phone, and I just ignore them because what I went back all the time. I was a yo-yo, and I was told, don't go back anymore. Things got to a level of danger where I was told, don't, or there's something, you know, I have to start looking at myself.
Yeah,
what's wrong with you?
Sure. All right, well, we have to take a short musical break. You're listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI. Guests today include Winifred Rule, author of Born to Destroy. It's a book about the female psychopath. And Dr. Craig Newman, professor of clinical psychology and researcher at the University of North Texas. So we're going to take a little musical break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Music for a rainy day. Esther Phillips with I Can't Stand a Little Rain. Here on 99.5 FM WBAI, you're tuned into The Positive Mind. Thanks for listening in today. Our guests are Winifred Rule, author of Born to Destroy. It's the first instructional book on the female psychopath. And Dr. Craig Newman, a professor of clinical psychology at the University of North Texas. Winifred's book, Born to Destroy, has gotten some great reviews from both readers and critics, and it's available at winniesbooks.com. That's W-I-N-I-S books.com. And Winifred has her email in every book, so if you want to ask some questions, if you want to get some feedback from her, check out winniesbooks.com, W-I-N-I-S books.com, to read her book. Craig, are you still with us?
Yes, sir. Yes, Ben. Hi.
Great. Just wanted to make sure our phone connection was good. And Winifred, thank you again for being here. We're talking about the traits and the situation of living with and dealing with a psychopath. And I can't imagine how difficult that must have been for you. Winifred, at what age were you able to get out of the house and get away from that environment?
When I got married. And when I saw my husband immediately, because I'm very sensitive, and I saw he had such beautiful eyes, and that I knew immediately that he was going to be a good person. That's something about the eyes of the psychopath that is different. And I know Craig may want to say something about that. Before that, you should also be aware that the psychopathic female is extremely envious. And you don't even know that she's envious. She could become envious over the shape of somebody else's legs that could have been hers. And this could trigger her motives to destroy. How come she didn't get the long legs of Doris Day? In my mother's era, Doris Day was big. Or how come she didn't get the looks of Elizabeth Taylor? Or how come the movie producers weren't banging down her door like they were other movie queens? Or how come she wasn't given a 40-carat diamond ring like Jackie O got? Oh, that was a big one for my mother. She was always doing
everything you're saying goes back to the point of grandiosity and that characteristic, right?
Exactly, the
feeling of, oh well, the world revolves around me. How come people aren't banging down my door with offers, right? With great riches and offers of, you know, fame and prominence. So that's interesting characteristic there. We have the list.
Yeah.
What do you think, Winifred, of this list? We rattled off a few of them, but what do you think, if you had to pick just two or three that are the biggest indicators, would you be able to do that off of this list of 22 characteristics?
I think the biggest thing that shocked me and really turned my stomach was the incapacity to love.
Right, and that one's right at the top of the list.
It is.
So you think that's the biggest indicator?
When you're devalued constantly, remember, the psychopath can operate on two different levels. They can charm you, and she aims to draw you closer because she has you as a target. Or she could devalue you if she has no use for you. So I was devalued and devalued and devalued. But it still didn't occur to me. That was my mother, and I still loved her no matter what. Unconditional love. But then when I realized, and I did a lot of research, it took me 13 years to write Born to Destroy. And I kept diaries, I couldn't figure out why every single happy occasion was spoiled with especially my mother. My sister ignored just about everything. When my mother showed up, whether it be for me, and I would go out of my way, a birthday, let's be happy, she would spoil it. My wedding, she would spoil it. And
How did she spoil your wedding?
Well, you know, the night before, the daggers, and in front of people, first of all, the psychopath will poison you to others behind your back. You don't even know this is being done. The neighbors, for example, God knows what she was saying, because throughout the years, I was always trying to be cheerful and pleasant, and I loved all people, but when you call someone, for example, my aunts or the neighbors, and you say hello, and they turn their back on you, or they do something to show that they don't really want you or they don't like you, and this is happening all over the place, and you know you've done nothing to deserve this, you start to wonder what's going on. And through the research and through counseling and through other psychopathy researchers, I realized that this is classic textbook psychopathic female.
Tell me about the wedding.
Well, the wedding... It was a rainy day, sort of like today, splashy rain. But it was a beautiful wedding because it was my husband. But the night before, I was coming in with my husband, and you know, you feel special. I didn't have too many friends. My mother used to poison them. She used to say thank you for being her friend. She has no friends. I mean, of course, she would tell them things. It was awful. But anyway, the wedding, I came into the house with my husband and my mother, who never wore makeup. My mother looked like the beggar. She was always wearing colorless clothes, tattered, you know, sort of sweatpants. Her hair was matted down.
And this was just the night before.
The night before.
And that's how she was dressed.
Well, yeah, she would dress like that all the time. Except there are some exceptions, but she pretty much looked like the bag lady. But here she was trying on some makeup. The neighbor was putting on the makeup. And I said, oh, I love the peach. You know, I wanted to be part of the girl talk. And she started to scream at me about what I looked like and how dare I give her any advice considering what I looked like. And this is before my husband-to-be and the neighbor. Now, the neighbor somehow or other, she had a relationship with that neighbor. So she had already poisoned the neighbor against me. So the neighbor didn't make any, you know, it was like nothing to the neighbor. Like, I almost deserve that. Although she didn't say anything. But for me, it was shocking. I remember going upstairs and crying. My husband said, in less than 24 hours, you're going to be mine. And of course, moving into his family, that was totally different. I had a mother-in-law and a father-in-law. Oh my God, they were so different from my mother. And you know, there was always that emptiness. Well, why can't they be like this, as if I wanted to change them? You cannot change a psychopath. And research has shown that you cannot change them, no matter what you do.
Thank you for that. That must have been really, really tough to deal with.
Well, that was only one thing. I mean, yeah. If I showed her the shoes, she had, who wants to see that? She didn't really want to be a part of it. She did everything to dagger. You know, at weddings, mothers, they all come together. This is a happy occasion. Sometimes the mother cries. My mother was doing Jackie Onassis imitations to see, looking in every mirror, now that she was dressed up, do I look like Jackie O this way? Do I look, I remember my aunt who sort of laughed because my aunt was very glamorous and she didn't say anything. My mother just was all about her.
Well, you know, the image that you describe of your mother looking in the mirror and comparing herself to whether it's Jackie O or I think you mentioned Elizabeth Taylor earlier, it brings something to mind. We've talked a lot on this program in the past about the narcissistic personality and narcissism and how, you know, how it fits into various topics that we discuss. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm wondering, is a psychopath necessarily a narcissist? And what I mean is being narcissist a prerequisite for being, a full-blown psychopath? I wonder if Dr. Newman, if you could tell us your feeling on that.
So narcissistic personality disorder, another personality disorder, is not the same thing as psychopathic personality disorder. The psychopath has narcissistic characteristics.
Okay.
And a lot of what Winifred was talking about, this grandiose sense of entitlement. In fact, this is almost one of the best ways to spot them often, is at these special events where the event is larger than a single individual. The marriage of two people is a beautiful thing. It's a union, and it's you know, to be celebrated, and it's more than. But when an individual wants to make themselves the center of something larger, you know, a special happy social occasion, it's a real good indicator. So psychopaths, this grandiose sense of self-worth, better than the rest, deserve more than the rest, is certainly a characteristic of psychopathy. But the individual with narcissistic personality disorder, simply the essence of the condition is that they feel better than the next person, and they
so,
want.
So yeah, my question is there an overlap there? Is there an
yes?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I mean, the thing is an individual with psychopathic personality disorder often could be diagnosed, perhaps, with also narcissistic personality disorder. But the point I'd like to make is that psychopathy also has this affective component, the emotional component of this remorseless use of others. Often the narcissistic individual will have some capacity for empathy.
And what about substance abuse?
Impulsive and antisocial.
What about substance abuse? Is that
well? That's where you also might be able to do a bit of a differential. Is that narcissistic personality disorder doesn't tend to have a high degree of comorbidity, a liability with substance use problems, whereas psychopathic individuals, because of this need for stimulation and impulsivity, has a very high rate of substance abuse in psychopathic individuals.
Very high rate, meaning much higher than the general population.
Yes. Yes, it's, you know...
What would you say the rate is? I mean, do you have a figure off the top of your head, or...?
Well, again, it depends on what population we're talking about, but in criminal populations, probably 80% of offenders also
four and
are psychopathic
five. Wow.
Will also have. In the general population, unfortunately, substance abuse and substance disorders are comorbid. They co-occur with many forms of psychopathology. In clinical depression, about 30% of individuals use substances as a way to deal with their depression.
Sure.
But for psychopathic individuals, it almost goes hand in hand. And this is where you can find a lot of psychopaths, too, is in the drug trade business.
Absolutely, especially what we see now with what's going on with the cartels and the very, very violent situation right now. What about Winifred? Was there a pattern of substance abuse among the psychopaths in your family?
My sister, I remember she would take pills, any kind of pill, whatever she needed. She just popped it in her mouth. I wouldn't say it was abuse, no, but she would just take pills. They drank. I remember my mother often when she did bad things, she would put the bottle of scotch on there, and I know she'd be guzzling, and she knew she did bad things. You know, they really do know right from wrong. They know what they're doing. They just don't care, and they want to beat the system. You see, the female psychopath feels that she was cheated out of life's bounty, and it is up to her to even the score. So again, the legs of Doris Day or something like that, that's going to trigger their envy, and they're going to do something. They know they've done wrong, but they'll rationalize and say, well, after all, I didn't get this and I didn't get that. And then they'll guzzle a little scotch, or maybe they'll take a Valium, and sometimes not even so close apart. You know, they don't pay attention to rules, even doctors, even for themselves. And they just don't care. And they just keep going on and on. And their whole thing is to dominate, control, and win. And they want to beat the system. And quite honestly, they do.
You know, earlier
that
on...
That may
the,
be
earlier...
even the biggest drug, Winifred, which you think is far more than, you know, a Quaalude or a good bottle of scotch. The biggest drug is actually manipulation, domination, devaluation of others.
Yeah, and maybe the endorphins and the dopamines experienced through, you know, being socially dominant in that way.
Well, they reel in contemptuous delight, is what they say. If they devalue you, my daughter, Jill, still remembers this. She was 6 years old at the time. Now she's 26, so this is a number of years. And every now and then she'll bring up, you know what grandma did? Her grandmother, Helen, my mother, had invited her. Jill, come and sit over on my lap. Come sit on my lap. And so Jill, you know, 6 years old, went to sit on her grandmother's lap. And when she got there, my mother said, you know, your other grandmother loves your brother more than she loves you. Now,
wow.
Of course, when doing that, she has a smirk on her face. And I know because she had done that to a few people. I had reunited with an old friend recently, and she
what
still...
What a thing to tell a six-year-old girl. Unbelievable.
Well, yeah. She told me I was as ugly as the ugly duckling. I mean, it's a whole thing. Remember, it's all through their personal, professional, and social life. It runs through. They're going to devalue you. She had no use for me, and so devalue. And so that's what she did.
This
well,
morning,
I would add one thing to this. Just today, there's a new PhD in London. It's a wonderful young researcher by the name of Lucy Folks, and she works with a colleague of mine, Essie Veeding, who's studying children who show these early characteristics of psychopaths. But what Lucy Folks has found is that most of us, we get pleasure, in particular social reward and satisfaction, from positive types of interactions. But what Lucy Folks is able to show is that psychopaths actually get enjoyment about negative types of social interaction. So the devaluation, the domination, the degrading of other people, they're actually, like, you're onto something, Ben, and no one's measured endorphins yet when these individuals are doing these actions, but it would be a very interesting research study.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, like, a brainwave scan of 24 hours in the life of a psychopath.
I'll ask one of my colleagues to take a look at that, because we're starting to use this questionnaire, which measures people's rewards that they get from types of social interactions, but psychopathic individuals enjoy these aversive, negative, antisocial types of social interactions. They get a rush out of it. And so it's sort of a, what Lucy calls this, is an inverted type of situation where what we generally as humans, we don't enjoy aversive, unpleasant social interactions. That's not what we're out for. But psychopaths seem to enjoy that. They seem to thrive on that.
Another good difference and measurement would be to see how it changes geographically. If certain locations, like you'd mentioned, war-torn countries, may encourage or foster an environment where psychopathic behavior is either rewarded or is more successful. Would there be more psychopathic people here in New York City versus, say, North Texas, where you are?
I think in New York they're going to be spotted out quickly. But Jen, I'm making a joke here. But one of our world study, when we looked at psychopathic traits across the globe, what you find is like, for example, in Asia. It's more the interpersonal characteristics that tend to dominate. Because the overt, the impulsive antisocial behavior will not be tolerated in parts of Asia. In Western Europe and the United States, the impulsive, dysregulated behavior is what really shows up more. So the culture shapes the expression of psychopathic features, no doubt. But one of the things we found is, again, to this adaptive or maladaptive nature of the condition, is we found that psychopathic traits across the globe were associated with increased fertility in women, So they're having more babies. But we also found that increases in psychopathic traits were associated with increased infant mortality.
Infant mortality. I wonder what the effect would be on testosterone in men.
Well, it's interesting. We're doing research on that. There's a colleague up in Canada, Justin Kura, working with him. And what we tend to find is that psychopathic individuals, they actually may be already elevated in terms of testosterone levels.
Okay.
So what actually happens, this is very early research, but what appears to happen is in individuals who aren't generally psychopathic, when you give them these, you can put some gel on their shoulder and you get a very acute rise in testosterone. What we find is those individuals who are generally lower on psychopathic features, when you jack up the testosterone acutely over a short period of time, they actually start to look a little bit more like psychopaths. So a lot of research to be done here, because neurohormones are very difficult to study. They change across the day in terms of our circadian rhythms.
Right.
Absolutely. And so it's tricky research, but it definitely plays a role.
Well, Dr. Newman, thank you so much, and I wish you the best of luck in that research. Definitely keep us posted with what you find. And thanks again for being able to join us today. We're just about out of time, so I'm going to let you go.
Great.
But I appreciate your answering all these questions and shining a lot of light on this subject for us.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
So that was Dr. Craig Newman of the University of North Texas, a professor there in clinical psychology. And my guest here in the studio has been Winifred Rule, the author of Born to Destroy. It's the first instructional book on the female psychopath. And it's gotten some good reviews. It's available online. You go to winniesbooks.com, winisbooks.com. Winifred, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Ben.
You know, Armand had actually arranged to have you on the show, and so I felt compelled to have you in and discuss this subject with you.
Would you mind, Ben, if I said one thing that Armand used to say years ago?
Go for it.
We are all in this together, my friends.
Isn't that true?
I just get so emotional because that's
true.
What he said, and that's what drew me to the show.
It really is, you know, and that's that feeling that drew so many people to this show, and I'm so blessed and honored to be a part of it now. So thank you again, Winifred, for being here today. You've been listening to The Positive Mind, can be heard here on WBAI Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m., 99.5 FM on your dial. And if you want, you can download our podcast. We're online on the iTunes Store. It's absolutely free. And if you go on the iTunes store and you search The Positive Mind, you can actually subscribe. And if you ever miss an episode, it'll just automatically download into your computer, so you don't have to worry about catching us live. We'll be back next week, and as you all know, as I'm sure you've heard, the fun drive will be starting, so I guess it's time to get out the checkbooks. We're going to have lots of new premiums and exciting stuff to give away, so hope we can count on your support, not just for The Positive Mind, but for WBAI, a treasure of New York media. So thanks again, and more music for a rainy day that we'll play you out with. Have a wonderful afternoon.